From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On November 30th, 2000, Francis Boyle, international law professor at the University of Illinois, gave a speech at Illinois State University that compared Israel's policies toward Palestinians with apartheid in South Africa. He urged universities to work toward divestment from Israel to protest its policies by pulling investment dollars out of companies that do business in the Jewish state. 2 years later, petition campaigns are underway at some 40 college campuses across the country. They're calling for universities to divest until Israel withdraws from the West Bank and Gaza Strip and accepts a Palestinian state as its neighbor. 71 Harvard faculty members and 56 from MIT have signed a divestiture petition. Many more have signed elsewhere. An opposing petition at Harvard has been signed by 439 professors. At MIT, that number is 143, and many more have signed elsewhere. Last Tuesday, Harvard University President Lawrence Summers plunged headfirst into the nationwide debate. At a prayer meeting on the first day of classes, he spoke out about what he sees as rising anti-Semitism in academic communities. He called efforts to divest from Israel actions that are anti-Semitic in their effect, if not their intent. Tonight, we're taking a hard look at Israel, the debate over divestiture, and the charge of anti-Semitism on American college campuses, with two of the best minds in the debate. Joining us from Champaign, Illinois, is Francis Boyle, who gave the speech 2 years ago that started the divestiture movement. He is professor of international law at University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, with a magna cum laude degree from Harvard Law School. From 1991 to 1993, he served as legal advisor to the Palestinian delegation in Mideast peace negotiations. Good evening and welcome, Francis Boyle.
Good evening, Tom, and my best to everyone in Boston.
Thanks very much for being with us tonight. With me in the studio is Alan Dershowitz, celebrated law professor at Harvard University and a leading opponent of divestiture and a vigorous supporter of President Summers' remarks. His latest book is Why Terrorism Works. Good evening and welcome, Alan Dershowitz.
Thank you. It's the first time in 38 years I've ever supported a president of Harvard.
And now you do. Mm-hmm. Listeners, what do you think? Is support for divestiture from Israel, in effect, if not intent, anti-Semitic? Is it right to apply the label to these opponents of Israeli policy toward Palestinians? And do we have a healthy conversation on Israeli policy in this country, or has something gone wrong? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Francis Boyle, I want to turn first to you, if I may. Why are you supporting divestiture from Israel, and what do you make of the charge that this campaign is, in effect, if not intent, anti-Semitic?
Well, thank you. Here I am working with the definition of apartheid found in the International Convention on the Suppression and Punishment of the Crime of Apartheid of 1973. Over 100 states in the world are parties to the Apartheid Convention. If you look in the definition of apartheid in Article 2, you will find that it clearly applies to Israeli practices inflicted upon the Palestinian people. Denial to members of a racial group or groups of the right to life, liberty of person, murder, infliction upon members of the racial group of serious bodily or mental harm, arbitrary arrest, illegal imprisonment, deliberate imposition on a racial group of living conditions, legislative measures calculated to prevent a racial group or groups from participation in normal life. So it seemed to me that clearly Israel's practices against the Palestinians qualified as apartheid within the meaning of the Apartheid Convention.
We have your view there.
The remedy should be the same, namely divestment, which is why I made the call that I did.
The remedy should be the same as what exactly?
As what happened in South African apartheid. I was a veteran of the anti-apartheid movement here in the United States, going back to my days at Harvard Law School when I studied with Professor Clyde Ferguson, the second African-American at Harvard Law School who taught me human rights and taught me all about apartheid in South Africa. As you know, there was a grassroots movement here in the United States to oppose apartheid in South Africa. And part of that grassroots movement was a divestment and disinvestment campaign. So for similar reasons, I have been calling for the same with respect to Israel. And I noticed that Archbishop Desmond Tutu from South Africa, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, has joined this struggle as well. He has identified Israel as inflicting apartheid practices upon the Palestinian people.
So to this point that Harvard President Lawrence Summers made last week, he said, of course, academic freedom of debate must be protected, but that globally there is a rise in anti-Semitism. It's in America also. It's on American campuses. And that the divestiture campaign, among other things, he pointed out, among other protests and other actions taken elsewhere, he said the divestiture campaign is anti-Semitic in its effect, if not its intent. What do you make of that charge?
Well, after graduating from Harvard Law School, I continued working on a PhD in political science from Harvard. I was a teaching fellow in the Harvard College for 2 years. I believe I was the first person ever to have taught international human rights in the Harvard College itself. While President Summers was studying economics, he was a graduate student at Harvard. So my belief here is that this is a failure of communication and understanding. Obviously, President Summers specialized in economics at Harvard. I specialized in law, political science, and human rights, and taught the subject of human rights while I taught at Harvard. This was in the 1977-78 academic year, Harvard undergraduates. I did teach apartheid in South Africa. I was involved in the anti-apartheid struggle.
But are you?
I'm not sure about what President Summers was doing at that time.
But are you really saying that Harvard President Lawrence Summers is not well enough educated to recognize anti-Semitism when he sees it?
I'm saying that President Summers spent his entire career studying economics and not human rights, and perhaps that has led him to misunderstand the purpose of our campaign and is why in the Boston Globe I did serially issued a request for us to open a dialogue with President Summers so that we could indeed discuss these matters, sit down with him in a non-confrontational way.
We invited Lawrence Summers here tonight, and he was unable to make it. We'll turn to Alan Dershowitz in just a moment for a reply. But before we do that, Francis Bacon, I just want to get your clear response on this. Is there anti-Semitism in intent or effect in the divestiture campaign against Israel, to the best of your knowledge?
Of course not. And as a matter of fact, we have large numbers of Jewish people who are part of our campaign. At the Harvard campaign, Professor Chomsky, one of the most distinguished Jewish Americans in the country. We have Jewish professors in Israel, in Europe. Indeed, there was a Jewish legislator in South Africa who publicly called the South African government to get involved in this campaign. So we have a lot of Jewish support for what we're doing. And again, I just think that I feel personally that if we were to sit down and have this dialogue with President Summers, we could allay his concerns.
Francis Bacon, you've made the opening case. I want to turn to Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz, here it is. Francis Bacon sees I'm sorry, Francis Bacon. That's very high praise. Francis Boyle. Forgive me, Professor Boyle. Francis Boyle sees a parallel in Israel to apartheid in South Africa. He says divestiture worked in South Africa. That's why he's applying it, attempting to rally support on American campuses for a divestiture campaign against Israel. What do you make of the case? And do you agree with Lawrence Summers that this is anti-Semitic in intent or effect?
Let's start with the history. Francis Boyle didn't start this. This campaign starts among the Palestinians. This is a Palestinian campaign built on the racism, Zionism is racism resolution at the UN, built on the Arab boycott. Everybody in the world knows that the Palestinian leadership and the Palestinian Authority is virulently anti-Semitic. They teach their children to hate Jews. They teach their children to kill and murder Jews, not only Israelis, but Jews at prayer in synagogues in Ankara and in Istanbul and in Greece and in Paris and in Rome. The Palestinian movement is at its core an anti-Semitic movement, and the goal of the Palestinian movement is to disenfranchise, delegitimate, and make Israel into the pariah state. It failed in Zionism's racism, and it's trying to impose the economic death penalty on Israel.
We could argue now, about where it began, but clearly at this point it has roots in American college campuses at least.
No, I think it has roots in European campuses, and it's now only beginning in a small number of American campuses, and in almost every campus the opponents outnumber the proponents. And it's interesting because what the proposal calls for is that the university should divest until Israel withdraws. Of course, in the year 2000, Israel offered to withdraw and offered the Palestinians a state, offered them capital in Jerusalem, and their response was murder, terrorism, suicide, bombing. The divestiture petition isn't directed equally against the Palestinians, and it doesn't say we should divest from the Palestinian Authority until they stop terrorism. It singles out Israel, and it tries to convey the impression that Israel is the worst human rights violator. There are other things beside apartheid in terms of human rights violations. Amnesty lists them. Our State Department lists them. Freedom House lists them. I think everybody would acknowledge that Israel is among the best compliers with human rights. They have the freest judiciary in the Middle East, the freest press in the Middle East. The only court to which a Palestinian can go and expect justice anywhere in the Middle East is the Israeli Supreme Court, not the Palestinian Supreme Court, not the Jordanian Supreme Court. Israel is not a model of human rights, but it's a very, very highly compliant with human rights. Torture is rampant in Jordan. It's rampant in Egypt. It's rampant throughout Saudi Arabia. In Israel, it was recently made illegal by the Supreme Court, even though all they did was apply a strong physical pressure to try to prevent suicide bombings. What's wrong with this proposal is it basically says there are many, many human rights violators in the world. We're going to focus on Israel. It reminds me of President Lowell in the 1920s when he said, let's have a debate. The debate should be, should we exclude Jews from Harvard because they cheat? Now, a great alumnus, Learned Hand, wrote back and said, but Protestants cheat too. Lowell said, you're changing the subject. We're talking about Jews. And that's what Francis Boyle is talking. He's not talking about human rights. He's talking about Jews, and he's talking about Israel. And he's saying, we don't want to talk about human rights compliance anywhere else in the world. We don't care how bad the Saudi Arabians are. We don't care how bad the Chinese are in repressing Tibet. We don't care about Libya. We don't care about Cuba. We only care about Israel. Now the South African analogy. I think there is an analogy. The analogy would be as follows. If after Mandela and Bishop Tutu became the leaders of that country, and by the way, they were not perfect on human rights compliance, if a group of southern bigots said, now we have to divest from South Africa because they're not perfect in human rights, and we don't care about whites who are not perfect, everybody would understand that for what it was. It would be bigotry. Now, should we also divest from Rhodesia? Rhodesia is practicing apartheid now as
Ellen
well.
Richards, I think we've got that. I want Francis Boyle to come back in before the break.
Well,
Francis
Boyle, we'll
come back to it in full. But Francis Boyle, before the break, what about it? Alan Dershowitz says to single out Israel is bigotry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've worked on many human rights causes for the last 25 years all over the world.
But you haven't sought divestiture.
The reason, actually, I had researched this project during the first Intifada and put it on the shelf, starting with the peace negotiations in 1991, and then there was Oslo, and I saw no need for it until Ariel Sharon went to the Haram al-Sharif, surrounded by 1,000 Israeli troops, desecrating Haram al-Sharif, and the next day, the Israeli army shot dead 5,000 Palestinians and started.
What, 5,000 Palestinians? Where did you make up that number? 5,000 Palestinians?
No, I said five Palestinians. Alan, if I could continue speaking, please. I didn't interrupt you. I didn't interrupt you. And it was very clear to me that Sharon and Barak had decided to terminate the peace process and resort to the use of military force against the Palestinians and reimpose a military occupation.
Okay, Francis Boyle, Alan Dershowitz, please stand by. No, right? We'll have to do it after the break. Okay. Our time is almost up here. We're talking about divestiture from Israel and the anti-Semitism charge. Is Harvard President Lawrence Summers right? Is support for divestiture from Israel in effect, if not intent, anti-Semitic? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about divestiture from Israel and the anti-Semitism charge. My guests tonight are Alan Dershowitz, law professor at Harvard University and an opponent of a petition drive to seeking divestiture, that is, American universities taking their investments out of companies that do business in Israel to protest Israel's Palestinian policy. Dershowitz says that is the wrong thing, and to single Israel out is bigotry. We have on the other side Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois, an early American proponent of the divestiture campaign. We invite you to this conversation as well, and there are so many questions raised here. Do you hear Israeli policy being criticized in America in a way that strikes you as anti-Semitic? Is it possible to strongly criticize Israeli policy toward Palestinians without being labeled anti-Semitic? Is the apartheid comparison apt, or is it outrageous? And has Harvard President Lawrence Summers raised an important national issue here or chilled an important national debate? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Alan Dershowitz, you wanted to respond to yes. Francis Boyle's comments about Ariel Sharon on the Temple Mount.
Well, first of all criticism of Israel is fair. Israel's the most criticized country in the world. Israelis criticize Israel all the time. It has the freest press, the most open criticism. I criticized Sharon when he went to the Temple Mount, continue to criticize Sharon for much of what he does. But let me read
you. Then isn't divestiture an extension of free speech?
Absolutely not.
I want you to speak
to that
because I think
exactly the point. But I want to first read you the quote from the information minister of the Palestinian Authority, admitting that the plan to resort to terrorism began well before Sharon went to the Temple Mount. Quote, the PA had begun to prepare for the outbreak of the current intifada since the return at the camp from Camp David negotiations by the request of Yasser Arafat, who predicted the outcome of the intifada as a complementary. It went on and on and on, and it says, and not as a specific protest against Sharon's visit to the Temple Mount.
So you're saying that visit did not precipitate the violence that we've seen?
They were waiting for a precipitating event. What Sharon did was foolish. He should be criticized for it. Now, the difference between criticizing, every country deserves to be criticized. But when you single out one country for economic capital punishment, you are sending a message to college students and others around the country that this is the worst human rights violator in the world, that it deserves a greater sanction than Libya and Iraq. And many of the people who signed this petition would favor investment in Cuba, investment in China, investment in Libya, investment in Iraq, divestment from Israel.
We have that point. And Francis Boyle, I'd like you to respond to that more fully than we were able to before the break. Is singling Israel out for this kind of severe economic sanction, is this bigotry? Is this anti-Semitism? If Israel,
okay,
why not others?
To set the record straight, the United Nations Security Council did condemn Israel in a resolution by a vote of 14-0-1 for starting the Al-Aqsa Intifada on September 28th. So the record is quite clear how all this started.
The record is not clear. If the Algerians introduced a resolution that the world was flat, it would win at the United Nations 14-0 with three abstentions.
Can we note the personal disagreement on that here?
I have not interrupted you, Alan. Would you please let me respond here to the question?
But Francis, but we'll take that response on that point. But the bigger picture.
14-0. As you look at it now, 1,700 Palestinians have been killed by Sharon. He killed 20,000 in Lebanon.
But Francis Boyle,
before he's done.
Our time is short tonight. I really want you to go to this core question because it comes up in Larry Summers' speech and the response to it in Alan Dershowitz's view here.
Sure.
That singling Israel out cannot be ethically, morally justified, that it's bigotry, that it's anti-Semitism. Please speak to it. If Israel, why not others?
I have an article here from Haaretz by Avi Primor, vice president of Tel Aviv University, former foreign ministry deputy director general for Africa, basically saying Sharon's South African strategy. It's September 18. He, too, accuses Sharon of apartheid against the Palestinians. So, again, I am dealing here with an objective definition from the International Convention.
But I don't hear an answer to this question, and I'd really like to hear you address it head-on. Why not divestiture in China, on Tibet?
We have, in the case of Israel, we have foreign military occupation of Palestinian land.
And not in China? And not in China of Tibet?
Ellen, I have never interrupted you.
Well, well you're going to get interrupted. Look, understand, this is a show in which we have a debate. You're not going to sit there and just tell lies without getting interrupted. So you have to understand
that. Alan Dershowitz, Francis Boyle, I really would like to hear you on this point.
Yes, we have foreign military occupation of Palestinian lands by Israel going back to 1967.
How far does it go back in China?
Israel has defied a sum total now of about 29 Security Council resolutions, including as of last Monday, which basically called upon them to withdraw to the lands prior they occupied September 28, 2000. The next day, Israel said, we're not going to obey it.
Francis,
so we have a long history here, very similar to apartheid in South Africa, and that's why I called for the remedy, because the legal situation is analogous.
I understand this at a legal basis, but I'm beseeching you. I mean, I understand the case you're making. Agreement aside, Alan Dershowitz clearly would not. But I'm beseeching you to speak to an issue that's big and sitting right next to that, which is not strictly legal, but which is at the heart of the charge of anti-Semitism, which is, hey, there are problems here. But why is Israel being singled out for this treatment? Why not Syria? Why not Egypt? Why not China?
This is the longest case, I believe, of foreign military occupation.
You're wrong. You're dead wrong. You're dead wrong. You're wrong about that. You're a professor of international law. You don't know what you're talking about. China is longer.
Excuse me, Alan, again. The United States taxpayer is paying $4 billion a year for Israel to oppress the Palestinians. When you see F-16 jet fighters blow up Palestinian infrastructure, that's provided by the United States. Apache helicopters provided by the United States. Black Hawk helicopters provided by the United States.
Is that the central difference then?
Well, I've already dealt with several similarities between apartheid South Africa and Israel. So there is a legal similarity, there is a human rights similarity, and economically, we, the American taxpayers, are paying for apartheid by Israel. We are paying for war crimes by Israel. The Fourth Geneva Convention clearly requires the United States to do everything in its power to prevent Israeli war crimes against Palestinians. To the contrary, we are aiding and abetting and facilitating Israeli war crimes against Palestinians.
May I respond to that, please?
Yes, and then I want to bring our callers in, please.
Of course, as everybody knows, Jordan killed more Palestinians in 1 month than Israel has killed Palestinians in a 53-year war. Egypt is a major beneficiary of American largesse in every possible way. It tortures. It kills homosexuals. It imprisons people for political dissent. Saudi Arabia is a major violator of human rights and a major beneficiary of American largesse. Occupation in China has lasted longer than the occupation in Israel, and Israel has twice offered Palestinian statehood, and both times they responded with violence. Russia occupies, Spain occupies, France occupies, English occupies. Singling out Israel is pure bigotry.
We've got the list. We hear the debate. We want to invite our callers in. There are so many that want to join the conversation. Pete is on the line. Welcome, Pete. You're on the air.
Shalom, gentlemen. The reason why I'm calling is I believe, as a Jewish person myself, that the best argument for bigotry is what our government and Israel is doing to the Palestinians. And I cannot agree more with the point that if we don't divest and do something about it, you know, the sentiment against Jewish people in the world is going to grow.
So you're seeing bigotry on the other side, and you're afraid that without a change in policy, anti-Semitism will grow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't you see it that it's happening more and more?
No, what you're saying is that the cause of anti-Semitism is Jews. The cause of anti-Semitism is anti-Semites. No, let me finish my point. The cause of anti-Semitism is anti-Semites. You know, Hitler said also, if Jews don't stop exploiting the Germans and their economy, there'll be more anti-Semitism. President Lowell said, if Jews don't stop coming to Harvard, there'll be anti-Semitism. There's only one cause of anti-Semitism, anti-Semites, not Jews.
Pete, what do you say?
Excuse me. There was an article not very long ago that called on Sharon's meeting with Churchill, where Sharon, when he was a young soldier, said to Churchill that, you know, the thing to do with the Palestinians was to make pastrami with them. And you can't say to one side, you can do anything you want, and to the other side, we're going to turn a blind eye. Because what's going on with terrorism right now is that people are getting fed up with people being so unfair. And they see the U.S., just like the professor was saying, you know, aiding and abetting somebody who's just, you know, taking their land. I mean, I'm a Jewish person myself.
Palestinian terrorism started before an inch of land was occupied.
Excuse me, do not tell me that I'm an anti-Semite.
No, you're just a jerk. You don't, I mean, you don't have to be an anti-Semite.
Our callers aren't jerks.
Thanks, no, some of them are.
Well, we don't look at it that way. Pete, thank you for your call. And there's a fear that somehow this all mounts up not to, to more anti-Semitism. Hannah's on the line. Welcome, Hannah. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I have two, actually, questions to Mr. Boyles. My question number one is, could we discuss in the same breath human rights of Jews of Arab descent who were refugees at the same time and now living in Israel, whose land was expropriated by Arab governments at the same time in 1948 and 1950 when they were expelled, and their money were taken by Arab government? The second question I have, could Mr. Boaz also tell us about human rights violation by Palestinian Authority and by, for example, Jordanian government, who 9 years ago revoked citizenship for 1.3 million Arab citizens who live on the West Bank, and, for example, in Lebanon, where still there are camps for Palestinian Arabs, and they're not allowed to have real estate, and they cannot really even have the citizenship. Or, for example, in Kuwait, that after 1991, after the desert storm, that 300,000 Palestinians were sent out who lived for four generations in Kuwait.
Hannah, we've got it. Let me put it to Francis Boyle. Francis Boyle, the caller asks, what about the violations of human rights across the Middle East, and in particular against Palestinians? Should we be divesting from the whole region?
Well, there are many human rights violations all over the world that do need to be addressed. As for confiscation of private property, certainly Arab governments owe reparations, compensation, to Jews who lost their private property, just as Israel owes reparations to Palestinians for the private property that was confiscated from them at the founding of the State of Israel.
And they offered it in the Camp David Accords. They offered
they
it in the Camp
no,
David Accords. Yes,
not.
They did. Of
not
course they did.
There is the Palestinians have a right of return
now
and compensation.
It. And did the Jews have a right of return? Did the Jews have a right of return to Arab countries and have their land back if they choose to live there as Jewish citizens?
I've said they have a right of certainly have a right of compensation.
No. But you said the Palestinians have a right both of compensation and of return, but
know,
the Jews only have a right of compensation but not of return, right?
I didn't say that at all.
Would you say it?
If the Universal Declaration of Human Rights guarantees a right of return and the right to property.
The Jews have the right to live in Hebron?
Ellen, you're interrupting. Let me go back to Hannah's second question. Mm-hmm. The second question deals with the atrocious treatment that has been inflicted on Palestinians by Arab states and governments.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have a situation where the Palestinians are stateless, and it is true the Arab states and governments have never cared less about the Palestinians. They are in a situation analogous to that of the Jews in Europe during the Nazi regime when the Jews
were denationalized. That's an outrageous comparison.
Very similar legal situation.
6 million Jews murdered, and you call that a comparison? That's obscene.
Where you have stateless people who don't have a state of their own, and they cannot be protected by anyone. And, of course, I myself have repeatedly condemned the manner in which Arab states and governments have treated Palestinians.
But not called for divestiture.
Ellen Dershowitz, Francis Boyle, we're hearing the answers. We're hearing the questions. We want to hear more from our callers. John is on the line. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
First of all, I want to disagree with the, at least for an American audience, with the comparison to South Africa and apartheid.
All right.
I think the more germane comparison, and one that we could understand, is that Israel is doing to the Palestinians kind of what we did to the American Indians. In each case, it's a horrible injustice that goes beyond the question of human rights. But I want to go to Ellen Dershowitz's argument, which is a clever one, that we should not, we should prioritize our concern about human rights. And I agree with that. We should prioritize. He made this point in the Boston Globe the other day.
Mm-hmm.
But the priority has to do with two things. The degree, the degree of the atrocities. I don't like the term human rights because that could, sometimes that can be a minor thing.
I agree with
the degree,
that.
The degree of atrocities and also our responsibility for them.
I agree.
We provide enormous military aid and other aid to Israel.
Anti-Egypt.
Anti-Egypt, and I agree.
Anti-Jordan.
I agree with you on Egypt, and I agree with you about Jordan.
So, John, where does that leave you coming down on divestiture charge of anti-Semitism?
But who do we provide most aid to?
Well, Jordan and Egypt together are about the same as Israel.
Okay, then I would say that we should raise the question about all three.
Okay.
But we provide most aid to Israel, and we have a great responsibility to make sure that the kind of thing that happened to the American Indians, I'm not saying we have a responsibility not to raise that question would be to put ourselves in the same camp as those people who practice the worst kind of anti-Semitism.
John, do you think this is being adequately raised in America today?
I think that it is very, very difficult to raise. I'm an academic. I know that when I raise this issue, and I'm very sensitive to the problem of anti-Semitism,
mm-hmm.
I know it exists. It's not as bad, by the way, in Europe or here, as anti-Arab sentiment is. There are physical attacks on Arabs all over Europe all the time. The French election in desperation, the right wing, or the German election, and tried to attack immigrants, and that means Arabs primarily. So, yes, there is anti-Semitism, but thankfully, it's been damped down in this country. Anti-Arabism is rampant. And very often I hear in Ellen Dershowitz's argument an appeal to that kind of racism.
Well, let me answer that,
please.
That's a very personal chat.
John, we've got it, and our time is almost up before the break. We thank you for your comments. Ellen Dershowitz.
Well, I have led the campaign to make sure the United States is not anti-Islamic and anti-Arab. That's why I'm against racial profiling. That's why I've always been in favor of equal treatment for Arabs. Many, many more Jewish lawyers support Palestinians and Arabs and defend them in courts of law. It's very rare that you see a Palestinian human rights activist supporting Jews or Jewish values. And so I think that there is a lot of anti-Arab discrimination, and we have to fight it. That's not a justification for anti-Semitism and singling out Israel for pariah status.
Ellen Dershowitz, Francis Boyle, please stand by. We're talking about divestiture from Israel. Do you feel free to criticize Israeli policy in your community? And when you hear criticism of Israeli policy in your community, do you hear anti-Semitism? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the campaign, the petition campaign for divestiture from Israel and the anti-Semitism charge that was raised last week by Harvard President Lawrence Summers. It's resonating around the country. Listeners, why is Israel singled out? Why not Egypt, Syria, China? And has Lawrence Summers raised an important national issue or chilled an important national debate? Do we have a healthy national conversation in America about Israel and the Palestinians? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests tonight are Francis Boyle. He's a professor of international law at the University of Illinois and a strong proponent of divestiture from Israel. And Ellen Dershowitz, law professor at Harvard University, author most recently of Why Terrorism Works, and a strong supporter of Lawrence Summers' view that this campaign is, in effect, if not intent, anti-Semitic. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I want to welcome into our conversation right now Tafiq Rahim. He's a junior at Princeton University. Area of concentration is Near East Studies. And Tafiq Rahim, you've been intimately involved in the divestiture campaign at Princeton and have walked away from it. Why?
Yeah, I was involved with the divestment campaign and actually called signatures from many of the faculty. But what I realized is that the dialogue coming out of the campaign started to be very divisive, and it alienated Israeli identifying Jews and many left-wing Israelis themselves from joining with human rights activists in calling for an end to occupation. And it also gave people such as Alan Dershowitz an opportunity to criticize the tactic of divestment rather than address the real message of an end to the Israeli occupation and a real and just Middle East peace.
So I want to be sure if I've got this correct. You walked away because you did not see it as an effective tactic, if you will, for addressing a problem that you see?
Yeah, it was not an effective tactic in bring about a Middle East peace that was both just and fair.
You've been in the midst of it. Did you see, do you see, and if it may be ineffectual in your view, but is it anti-Semitic?
I really like to address that. I was in, you know, the starting stages of this divestment campaign at Princeton, which is an inspiration for many divestment campaigns around this country. Mm-hmm. First of all, there was no influence from any Middle East parties or Palestinians, as Alan Dershowitz stated. And secondly, there was no anti-Semitism. Many of the people are friends. They discuss issues with different Jewish people on campus. Anti-Semitism was nowhere to be found in this campaign. I can understand that some people who identify with Israel will feel isolated by this campaign, which is why I believe in, I guess, more constructive dialogue between parties rather than accusations.
So you're saying ultimately you see the solution in Jews and non-Jews, Israelis and non-Israelis, talking together about this rather than drawing the divestiture line.
Yes.
I think he's right. I mean, the vast majority of Jews in Israel oppose the occupation, would like to see it end. Recent poll before the Intifada showed almost 78% of Israelis wanted to end the occupation, were opposed to the settlements. I myself am against the occupation. I'm in favor of a Palestinian state. I'm against the settlements.
But Tafiq Rahim does not see anti-Semitism in the divestiture campaign.
Well, he's just wrong. Of course, he wouldn't understand that this begins in the Middle East. There's no question it begins in the Middle East.
Why wouldn't I understand that? I mean,
because you see it from your American perspective. And your American perspective, you think you started it by yourself. But it didn't start in America. It didn't start in Princeton. It didn't start in Illinois.
Can it not start spontaneously in two different areas?
It could, but it's unlikely, particularly when it's really part and parcel of the anti-Israel boycotts that started probably before you were born and the Zionist racist mm-hmm. resolution. This is part and parcel of a 50-year effort to delegitimate Israel, to deny Israel the right to exist living side by side with the Palestinians. Remember, too, that 82% of Palestinians, according to a recent Beirut poll, oppose the creation of a Palestinian state living side by side with Israel. They see creation of a Palestinian state as a first step toward the end of the existence of Israel. And if the Palestinian state is given as a reward for terrorism rather than as a reward for ending terrorism, terrorism will persist.
Alan
and we will
I've
never
got to come
see
in here.
Peace.
Tafiq Rahim, final question.
Yeah.
If not divestiture, what?
I mean, I just think there needs to be more pressure on the American government. There needs to be more public debate and dialogue both on campus and in the media. So one thing about divestment is that it just distracts from the issue. Look, Alan Dershowitz came out as an ardent advocate of Palestinian human rights and freedom and ending the occupation. Yet he's just using the divestment campaign to distract from the fact that he doesn't want a Palestinian state to ever be created.
I do.
He said it just right now. He said it'd be a response to terrorism. We cannot give them a reward as a Palestinian
state. That's
right.
It should be a reward for the end of terrorism.
As a distraction to, you know, from what he really wants.
We understand that debate, and it's a slightly different debate, but we thank you for making the point. And Tafiq Rahim, thanks for joining us tonight. Francis Boyle here is a one-time supporter of the divestment campaign who's walked away not because he sees it as anti-Semitic, but because he sees it as ineffectual, as divisive.
Right. Well, of course, everyone is entitled to his or her own conscience, and this is a real grassroots campaign. I've just been informed by the students of Berkeley. We now have 50 campuses signed up. I am a faculty advisor here at the University of Illinois. I have seen no anti-Semitism in our campaign here, and we have many Jewish students.
Your students have complained about anti-Semitism. To me, your students have complained about it. Maybe you don't see it.
Campaign. But in any event, I think I personally started this call in November of 2000 in the speech I gave. I wasn't instructed by anyone to do that. It has taken off. It started very slowly, first with Berkeley, then Ann Arbor, then here. We now have 50 campuses. We really need a grassroots movement, as I saw it, because of the gridlock both in Washington, D.C. and in Israel.
Is the summer speech a setback? Is the Lawrence summer speech a setback for you, Francis Boyle?
That the people, certainly a majority of the people in Israel and a majority of the Palestinians want peace on the basis of a two-state solution. Indeed, it was my job as legal advisor to the Palestinian delegation to the Middle East peace negotiations for 2 years to figure this out.
And Francis Boyle, Alan Dershowitz, please, Tim, I want to get at least one more call in. Wendy's calling from Joplin, Missouri. Hi, Wendy, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to say I think apartheid is apartheid wherever it is. And since the late 1800s, the Israelis have been claiming anti-Semitism against all different kinds, all different countries.
You know, US, since the late 1800s, there has been a
sometimes
lot of anti-Semitism,
true.
Hasn't there? I mean, there was.
Crutch.
Yeah, you know,
it's
we claimed it against the Nazis too. Boy, that was a real mistake, wasn't it?
But
it's a crutch that whenever you know somebody questions their tactics, they holler anti-Semitism because that is their biggest defense.
Wendy, thank you for your call. I want to get one more. Louise is on the line. Welcome, Louise. You're on the air.
Hi. I am so worried about this. I'm in the middle of this. My son is a junior. He's going to go to school, to college in a year.
And what's your view? What's your concern?
I'm concerned about Professor Doyle. I think he's very dangerous. He's introducing anti-Semitism in the states, in the college. He's a very educated similar to Hitler. I agree with the professor of Harvard. I agree with the director of Harvard. This is very dangerous. He should have not even introduced this in college. It can lead and mislead students, and it will give rise to anti-Semitism. I'm in the middle. Between my children, I don't want them to suffer. They're Jewish. I don't want them to suffer anti-Semitism. And my mother-in-law was one of a handful of resistance fighter in the Holocaust. She lost all of her family except two siblings. She's written books, and she has pictures at the Washington Museum of the Holocaust.
Louise, we understand the depth of your concern, and thank you for calling. Francis Boyle, we only have a minute left. Your final thoughts, please.
Sure. Well, let me respond to the last point. Here in downstate Illinois, we have Matt Hale and the World Church of the Creator that has a track record of violence against blacks, Jews, and Arabs. When Matt Hale tried to get a law license here in the state of Illinois, I worked very hard to try to stop that. When Matt Hale then moved to Montana because he couldn't get a law license here, I interceded with the Montana bar to make sure he does not get a license to practice law in Montana.
We understand that move.
Excuse me. By comparison, Alan Dershowitz represented Matt Hale and tried to help Matt Hale, a violent anti-Semite, to get a license to practice law here.
Francis Boyle, I have to leave time for one more comment, but thank you so much for joining us. Alan Dershowitz?
Well, I think Boyle should be judged by the accuracy of the last statement. Of course, I did not represent Hale because he refused to contribute the fee to the Anti-Defamation League. I believe in free speech, and that's why I didn't want Hale to be denied admission to the bar just because of his ideology. Boyle doesn't believe in free speech except for Palestinians and except for certain people who he agrees with. And what we're seeing here is a terrible beginning of a deep, deep problem. And I'm glad that President Summers nipped it in the bud.
That's all we have time for tonight. Alan Dershowitz, thank you for joining us. Alan Dershowitz, law professor at Harvard University. Latest book is Why Terrorism Works. And Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois. You can read Harvard President Lawrence Summers' speech and view the divestiture and anti-divestiture petitions on our website. Log on to onpointradio.org. This is On Point. The past year has seen much debate about the tensions between civil liberties and homeland security. Veteran human rights leader Jerry Leber, founder of Helsinki Watch, says the two interests should actually be working together, not against each other. Leber spoke earlier this week at the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston. Here are excerpts from her speech.
In the past 12 months, under the pretext of fighting terrorism, civil liberties have come under attack all over the world. There are some who assert that human rights are no longer relevant, that the suspension of our rights and freedoms, even the selective use of torture, is justifiable under present conditions. But in fact, the protection of human rights and the struggle against terrorism are not opposed to each other. They should be inextricably linked in our policies both at home and abroad. If we abandon our own principles in the fight against terrorism, we become no better than the terrorists themselves. For many years, people in other countries have been asking me why our government is so quick to pronounce judgment on the rest of the world but not on itself. They also want to know why the United States has almost consistently refused to sign or ratify international treaties that support important human rights principles. A recent example is the International Criminal Court, which the U.S. government has unsigned and tried to sabotage in every possible way. The agreement to establish the court, ratified by more than 60 countries, came into force on July 1st of this year. We see it as a tremendous victory in the struggle to deter dictators and to prevent genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. But the Bush administration has rejected the court because of the remote possibility that an American might be unfairly brought before it. It has threatened to veto UN peacekeeping missions unless U.S. peacekeepers receive immunity from prosecution. It is trying to blackmail other countries, saying that the United States will withdraw aid and diplomatic support to countries unless they sign bilateral side agreements, giving U.S. citizens immunity from the court. Several countries, Romania, Israel, Tajikistan, East Timor, have already signed such agreements. The United States has a long historic tradition of opposing international alliances. It stems initially from a belief that our own civil liberties protections are greater than those afforded by international law. But our current president seems to be driven not by principle but by arrogance. He seems to believe that the United States, with its great power, stands above international law. At a time when Washington is asking for worldwide cooperation in tracking down terrorists, the United States has succeeded in alienating its allies in Western Europe as well as in the rest of the world. In my view, one of the most important tasks facing the U.S. human rights movement and all of us is to try to change the U.S. government's behavior. We must urge repeal of those aspects of the Patriot Act that do little to protect us against terrorism and severely threaten our civil liberties. We must persuade our government to use its leverage with its current allies to effect changes in their repressive policies. We must convince our government to work together with other governments in foreign policy matters. And we must get it to agree to the international enforcement of ideals and principles that Americans have always held dear.
Jerry Labor is a veteran human rights leader and founder of Helsinki Watch. Her speech was delivered earlier this week at the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Kelly Jones, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Darren Manoogian and Oliver Reed. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Support for this